Last week, we were looking at the development of the machloka between Beit Hillel and Shammai, and really the core question I want to deal with is, how did Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai deal with machloket? And I mentioned last week that the Mishnah, which here is source 5, the Mishnah in Sukkah, really seems to be kind of the focal point around which everything revolves in kind of solving this problem. And that is the Mishnah about a sukkah in which you're sitting in the sukkah, but the table's in the house. Beit Shammai says, you're not Yotzei. Beit Hillel says, you are Yotzei. The language of the Mishnah is a little bit awkward because Beit Shammai says, pasul. And so it turns out the Gemara says, there's two machlokot. One machlokot is a sukkah that's only big enough to hold you and not your table, kasher. And the second thing is, if you're sitting in a big sukkah, but your table's in the house, are you Yotzei? Right. But the interesting thing is that Beit Shammai said, you're not Yotzei, but he'll say, you are Yotzei. And then there's the story told. We're going to come back to the story. We'll read it again later on. But we looked at source 7 that kind of summed up a few of the attitudes. And we saw that Rabbi Chezkel said that Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai are essentially options. In other words, if you do like Beit Hillel, you're Yotzei. If you do like Beit Shammai, you're Yotzei. Which seems to invoke the statement in the famous story, Elu Va'elu Divrei Elohim Chayim. They're both God's words. Then the second line, which was Rav Yosef, said, no, if you follow Beit Shammai, you're not Yotzei. Lo asa v'lo klum, he didn't do anything. So it's not that they're both equally legitimate. And I think we could safely say that what Rav Yosef means is that they're mutually negating, meaning that Beit Hillel's attitude is that if you follow Beit Shammai, you're not Yotzei. And Beit Shammai's attitude is if you follow Beit Hillel, you're not Yotzei. And the proof is from the story in Sukkah. Because what happened? They had the machloket about whether or not you're Yotzei if you sit in a sukkah but your table's in the house. And then Beit Hillel told a story to prove their point. What was their story? The elders of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai together went to visit Rabbi Yochanan ben Achorani on Sukkot, saw him sitting that way, and didn't say a word to him. So the assumption is that they didn't say a word. That means they were okay with what he was doing. That means sitting like that's okay. Beit Shammai turned around and said, what are you talking about? They did say something to him. What they said to him was, if this is how you've been sitting in a sukkah, you've never fulfilled the mitzvah sukkah. Which means, from their perspective, either you do it our way or you're not Yotzei. It's not equally legitimate. Then we had the most extreme version, which was Nachum Yitzchak, quoted the Mishnah in Brachot. Remember that Rabbi Tarfon would tell the story that Beit Shammai and Hillel had the machloket about how to physically, your body language when you say Kriyat Shema. Beit Shammai said you have to lie down at night and stand up in the morning, but Hillel said say it however you want. And Rabbi Tarfon said, I was coming on the road and it was nighttime, so I lay down on the side of the road to say Kriyat Shema and I almost got killed. And Chachamim's response to him was, you deserve to get killed because you violated the words of Beit Hillel. And so Nachum Yitzchak quotes that and says, if you do like Beit Shammai, you're Chayav Mitah. Now, they don't mean literally Chayav Mitah, but they mean it's not just, you know, there's three options here. Option one is that Beit Shammai is an equally legitimate perspective. You could do either way. Option two is there's only one way. But you're not a bad person for doing the other way, you're just not Yotzei. And then there's the extreme version, which is if you do it the wrong way, not just not doing it at all, you're demonstrating an opposition to the halachic process, and therefore you're really in jeopardy. That seems to be what plays out. And so what we have is three different attitudes about the machloka Beit Shammai and Hillel. Are Beit Shammai and Hillel equally legitimate? Take your choice. Are they mutually exclusive but with respect? Or is following the one that's not been accepted as halacha worse than doing nothing? Those are the three options. So turn the page and you're going to see a very strange development in this entire direction. Right, and I introduced this last week very quickly, is the first parak of Masachet Yevamot is very twisty. And it's essentially about a case of Yibum where the girl who, in the words that we use, falls to the man, is otherwise prohibited to him besides being his sister-in-law. In other words, the Torah says you're not allowed to marry your sister-in-law, except in a case of Yibum. But if she's also prohibited to you for another reason, like she's your daughter, or your granddaughter, or your wife's sister, or a whole mess of other possible relations, where the original marriage was legit, but now you can't do, then you don't have Yibum. And you don't have to do Chalitza, and she can go free. What happens if there are multiple wives? So the halacha is all the wives go free. That's Beit Hillel. They all go free. And that would mean, by the way, that if you did chalitza on one of them, it's a meaningless act. It's just taking your shoe off. It doesn't mean anything. And it would mean that this girl could marry a kohen, because she's not a chalitza, she's just a widow. And it would mean that if you, the brother-in-law, did marry this co-wife, you violated the Torah's law of marrying your brother's wife. So be huge, huge implications here. Beit Shammai say the opposite. Beit Shammai say that the co-wives are not exempted. So if three wives fall to me, and one of them is my daughter, but the other are just regular women, I have to do Yibum or Chalitza on one of them. Not my daughter, the other ones. Right? And we have this machloket, and it has all those implications, because that means that if I did Chalitza, she really is a Chalitza, she can't marry a Kohen. And by the way, if I did marry her, that's legit, and the kid's okay. Right? Because it's a legitimate Yibum. All right. So now, here's where the kicker comes in. Look at the Tosefta in Source 9. Afal pi shenechleku Beit Shammai keneged Beit Hillel b'tzarot uvachayot. Beit Shammai Beit Hillel have this machloket. Remember, machloket, when it comes to issues of arayot, of forbidden relations, we are very, very stringent. Any safek, any kind of case, we're very stringent. Especially in Masachet Yevamot, it's full of all sorts of protective of defenses. Even though Beit Shammai Beit Hillel disagreed about tzarot, the co-wives, achayot, it's a different case, uva safek eshet ish. Safek eshet ish is several possibilities what that is, that a woman may still be married or may not be married, right? Uva get yashan. Get yashan is a get that you gave and then subsequently you were with your wife, with the ex-wife. Do you have to write another get? Uva mekadesh et ha'isha b'shava pruta. The first mishnah in Kiddushin is what's the amount of Kiddushin. So according to Beit Shammai, it's a dinar. According to Beit Hillel, it's a pruta. A dinar is 192 prutot. It's a huge difference. So let's say I'm a kaddish girl with a pruta. According to Beit Shammai, we're not married. According to Beit Hillel, we are. According to Beit Shammai, what happens if another guy comes in and gives her a dinar afterwards? According to Beit Shammai, she's married to the second guy. According to Beit Hillel, she's married to the first guy. What if she has relations with the second guy? See the thing? So, and again, it's like a no-win sort of situation. There's no easy way out of this. Even though they have these machlokot, and this is the kicker, even though they have these machlokot, v'megareshet ishto v'lanei mo bepundiki, that's the case I mentioned where a guy divorces his wife and then subsequently they're alone together. Lo nimnu beit shammai lisan hashim beit hillel v'lo beit hillel beit hashamai. Beit shammai beit hillel intermarried. You see what a powerful statement that is. That they intermarried. What does that mean, intermarried? That means they're willing to say, we will marry the daughters of Beit Shammai and vice versa. Which means one of two things. Either we're saying, we trust you when you tell us that this particular girl is not the result of one of these questionable things. Or we're legitimating your position as well. One of the two. Ela nahagu ha'emet v'ha'shalom b'neihem. What was their practice? Truth, but peace. Shemar ha'emet v'ha'shalom e'havu. Pasuk in Zechariah. So they loved the truth, they went after the truth, but they also harmony. So they valued harmony. And it sounds like an idyllic image. It sounds like an idyllic image where you have these two schools that have significant and deep and powerful disputes about issues of core law, thank you, of core law, and yet they were able to somehow coexist even in areas where they disputed in the law.
And do you believe this?
Do I believe it? Albeck seems to see it's a little bit idyllic of a description. Let's keep going. You'll see why. Well, you see why I'm saying that. Now, we continue. I want to see the rest of this Tosefta. Alpha Pisha Elu Osrin Ve'elu Matirin. Even though Beit Hillel says Asur, Beit Hillel says Mutar, or vice versa, in different cases. Lo Nimnu Osin Tarot Elu Agavelu. They would do Tarot together, which means women from Beit Shammai, women from Beit Hillel might make a challah together. Even though according to Beit Shammai, this thing might be Tameh, right? Now again, what does that mean? Does that mean that they trusted each other to say, this is something that according to your standards is also good, right? Or did it mean that they said, even though it's your standard, we legitimate your standard?
Could it be that Shammai had, this was his opinion, but in practice, everybody followed Beit Hillel?
Right. So in other words, it's possible that everybody went one way, right? That everybody went one way, but it sounds from the Tosefta like that it's not like that.
Is this equivalent to the Ashkenazic Sephardic kind of different?
Not really, because Ashkenazim and Sephardim are not going to claim that the other one's position. For instance, if I know people, I know a lot of people, I was with them this past Shabbat, who eat rice on Pesach. I'm certainly not going to say that they're not observant, they're not Orthodox. That's the, you know, Ashkenazim took upon themselves not to eat that. But nobody thinks that rice is chametz. We all agree rice is not chametz. And Ashkenazim agreed not to eat rice on Pesach. But that's very different. Here, Beit Shammai is saying, this girl is usher to you, and if you have beer with her, then the kid is a mamzer.
But that was right? The practice that Beit Shammai actually followed.
So that's exactly what we're trying to see. Did they actually follow it? And that's where the sukkah thing comes in, because it makes it sound as if they really held to their position. We'll look at that Mishnah again. That's exactly the core issue that we're dealing with. Right?
Isn't it a general issue also just in the Talmud and the Gemara? There's machlokes in everywhere.
Yeah.
Halacha can be said like somebody.
The question is, at what point? You're going to see that the machloket lasts for a long time, and for quite a while, it continues to be a machloket, and both options, at least in some versions, seem to be legitimate. Like you're allowed to take either option you want.
Basil and Sotefta in paragraph Yud Aleph, Alpha Pi Shi'ilu Osrin Ve'elu Matirin, Lo Nimnu Osim Tarot Elu Agavelu.
Interesting pasuk in Mishlei. Every man's way is correct in his own eyes. Correct? In other words, what does that seem to say? That Beit Shammai really held their way as the proper one. But Hashem somehow weaves them together, so they're able to somehow work together, even though they held their position and had not yet ceded their position. Right?
Rabbi Shimon disagrees, and he says, Min ha-safek lo ayu nimna'in, aval nimna'in heim min ha-vadai.
That Beit Shammai and Hillel would work together if it was a case of safek. Because it's already a safek, and according to your position, it's okay, we'll do it. But if it's vadai, meaning it's a case where it's certainly, according to us, prohibited, then we back off. So he said it wasn't as harmonious as that, but still within guidelines. And then you hear this wild statement, Le'olam halacha kedivrei Beit Hillel. Which means, halacha is kebeit Hillel. When is this statement being made? Who was it, Jason? You asked how realistic, how right? Okay, good. Because watch the next one. So if somebody wants to be machmir and take all the stringent positions of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, he's a fool walking in the darkness. That's the statement. Hatofes kulei Beit Shammai kulei Beit Hillel. If on the other hand you take all of the leniencies, whoever's lenient, right? So rasha, that guy's a rasha. Ella, and now watch, remember we originally said halacha kebeit Hillel, which means you've got to follow Beit Hillel. Now what does it say? Im kedivrei Beit Shammai kekuleinu chomerihom. If you follow Beit Shammai, you've got to follow them all the way, lenient and stringent. Im kedivrei Beit Hillel kekuleinu chomerihom. Which means you have a choice, Beit Hillel or Beit Shammai. It could be either one, but you got to be consistent. You can't pick and choose. Except it's not the rest of the statement, because now take a look back on page 1 at source 2, which is the kind of the focal point of this whole discussion, is the statement that they're in the Beit Midrash. For 3 years, Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai disagree. Halacha should follow us, which means nobody's ceded anything yet. And then the Bat Kol comes and says, Eilu v'eilu d'vareil v'chaim hen v'halacha kebeit Hillel. Right? And then the Gemara asks, well, if they're both d'vareil v'chaim, why is halacha kebeit Hillel? And we got that surprising answer that it wasn't about their brilliance, or about a bat kol or anything, but it was about their kindness and their humility and the fact that they're easygoing and they include Beit Shammai in their teachings. Wild stuff. It gets wilder.
Generally, wasn't Beit Hillel considered more lenient?
Usually, not always.
Yeah, but usually.
But that, at least, is not the reason the Gemara gives for the reason halacha follows them. And by the way, halacha does not always follow them. And we're going to see a famous exception.
Six times.
So we're going to see one of the famous exceptions here in the next case. But first, I just want to show you in the next source 10, in that Mishnah Yevamot that said they would marry each other's families. Toshma Shalu et Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua is one of the stars of this entire series of Agadot that we're studying. He's the one who gets up and says Lo Hashemayim. He's the one who receives the students from Yavne, right? Sarata bat mahu. So what's the story with the co-wife of a daughter? That's exactly the Beit Shammai Beit Hillel disagreement. Amar machloka Beit Shammai. It's a machloka. Whether or not she's exempted, because two women fell to a man, one was already prohibited to him, is the other one exempted? V'halacha kedivrei mi. So they said to Rabbi Yeshua, who do we pass him like? Now this is already Rabbi Yeshua. This is already after the Churban. Amar lehem, watch what he says. Minei ma atem achisim roshi ben shnei harim gdolim. What are you putting my head in between two big mountains? In other words, here's Beit Shammai, here's Beit Hillel. Don't ask me what the halacha is. It's pretty strange. Ben shnei machlokot gdolot ben Beit Shammai Beit Hillel. Mitarei ani shema yarutsu gugalti. I'm afraid that they're going to smash my head. In other words, I don't want to get involved in this fight. Aval ani me'id lachem. But I can testify al shtei mishpachot gedolot shehi b'Yerushalayim, mishpachat Beit Tzvuim ben Achmai, mishpachat Beit Kufay ben Mekoshesh. So there's these two families. Shem bnei tzarotu mehem konim gedolim shimshu al gavei mizbeach. That they were originally there was a matriarch in the family who was one of these cases, and she was at Sarah, and evidently that meant that because the co-wife was prohibited, she went free without anything. She was permitted to marry a Kohen, and her son was a Kohen Gadol. All right. Very good. If she had been a Chalutza, her kid couldn't be a Kohen Gadol, because a Chalutza is not allowed to marry a Kohen, etc. All right. So Rabbi Yeshua said, I don't want to get involved. But notice, in Rabbi Yeshua's day, there's still this going on. So the Gemara that we saw last week in Chulin, which is... we had it in here somewhere, says that, here it is, in source 4, says that when do we say that you could make your choice? Before there was a bat kol, before the voice came out and said, Alaha ke Beit Hillel. But after that, there was no choice, Beit Hillel. Or, according to Yeshua, there's still a choice, because Beit Yeshua, what's his attitude about a bat kol? I don't listen to you. Lo b'shamayim. And therefore, Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, there's no settlement. It gets better. I'll remind you of something. We're not going to take a look at source 11. You all know source 11. You ask anybody on the street, how do you light Hanukkah candles? And anybody on the street will tell you, Machloka Beit Shammai Beit Hillel. Everybody knows this. Right? How does Beit Hillel work? You start with 1, the next night 2, the next night 3, the next night 4. And according to Beit Shammai, you start with 8, 7, down to 1. Everybody knows that. Right? And then what we hear is a crazy story. Rabbi Yochanan is the end of the 3rd century, 100 years after Rebbe, or about 80 years after Rebbe, tells us there were two elders in the city of Sidon, that's across the lake from Tveria. One of them followed Beit Hillel, one of them followed Beit Shammai, and each one gave their reason. And nobody said one of them was wrong. Which means that Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel remained options well afterwards. Now there's several reasons that's not a great proof. Because first of all, as we spoke about a couple years on Hanukkah, it's possible that that's not really Beit Shammai Beit Hillel. And second of all, that's talking about adorning a mitzvah, not the essential mitzvah. Because the essential mitzvah is one candle. So the question is, do you add, do you subtract? It could be when it comes to adorning, we don't care so much to make that decision. Okay? But that's all part one. Part two, we looked at last week. And this is the exception. There's a famous Mishnah at the beginning of Shabbat. It lists a bunch of decrees of things we're not allowed to do on Erev Shabbat, close to Shabbat, because it might lead us into doing Malachan Shabbat. And then we have this Mishnah that says, Ve'elu min alachot shamru ba'aliyah Hanani ben Chizkia ben Gurion. They went up to this fellow's attic where they were studying. Sha'alu levakro nimnu v'rabu Beit Shammai Beit Hillel. They went up to visit him, and it turned out there were more Beit Shammai than Beit Hillel. What'd they do? Yudchet v'en gazu bo bayom. They made 18 decrees. In other words, it was like a filibuster, the inverse of a filibuster. They found there was more Beit Shammai than Beit Hillel, and Beit Shammai rushed the vote, and they voted in 18 decrees, and they beat Beit Hillel. All right? So it sounds like it was just a session of debating, and it happened to be more Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, so they pushed these decrees. But the Gemara tells us something much more powerful and much scarier that turns everything on its head. It says that in Source 13, tells us the Gemara, a story, that Hillel and Shammai themselves gathered in to study, and they had a disagreement, and Hillel was disproven by Shammai, and it says that Hillel was sitting there with his head down and Shammai standing over him like the teacher and Hillel like the student, and it was a very scary day. And what they did is they put a sword down and said, anybody wants to come in, nobody can leave, and they passed all these decrees. It seems to be a conflation of a story of Hillel and Beit Hillel. But the Yerushalmi, we saw this last week, tells a much weirder story about that and explains what the sword is. And the Gemara then had made a comment that this day was as difficult for Am Yisrael like the day of the Egel. So I wonder, how does this get to the Egel? He says, Tana Rabbi Yeshua Unya, Talmidei Beit Shammai Amdulahen Milamata Vayu Horgin B'Talmidei Beit Hillel. Is that crazy? Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel took swords out and were killing each other. This is not metaphoric. Now, whether it really happened is a different story, but it's not meant metaphorically. You'll see why. What? Yeah. No.
It's metaphorical.
But it's not metaphorical. You'll see. You'll see in a minute. This is not metaphorical. They mean it literally. All right? And Tani Shisha Mehen Alu Vashar Amdu Alehen B'Charvot Machim. That they say that six of Beit Shammai went up to kill, and the rest of them stayed below. But then we have in Hilchot Eretz Yisrael, which is a work from the Geniza, that there's a fast day established on the 4th of Adar because of all the Talmidei Beit Shammai and Hillel who died in that civil war. It's not metaphoric. So in the Sabbath, they're saying a fast day because of this. And in the famous Halachot Gedolot, we're going to end with this source, but then try to put it all together. In the famous Halachot Gedolot, we've talked about this a bunch of times. It lists, you know, we have Megillat Tanit. We're familiar with Megillat Tanit. It's the earliest halachic work we actually have. It's a list of days on which you're not allowed to fast, or in many cases not have eulogies. And they're basically because of Hasmonean wars and victories, etc. Then there's a later Megillat Tanit, which is the opposite, which actually lists fast days that you probably never heard of. And it first shows up in the Halachot Gedolot. It's replicated later on in other halachic works. It does not show up in the Rambam. And Shulchan Aruch has a whole siman of this, and quotes all these days. And you should fast on the first day of Nisan because of the death of Nadav and Avihu, and on the 10th of Nisan because of the death of Miriam, the 26th of Nisan because of the death of Yeshua, etc. Famously it says, on the 8th of Tevet we have a fast day, because the Torah was translated into Greek, remember that? There was darkness for 3 days. The 9th of Tevet, remember this one? It's a fast day, and we don't know why? Right? What? Maybe, yeah. It doesn't say the 10th of Tevet, because I'm mentioning ones that are in Tanakh. And then it lists the following. B'tisha'abo, gazru ta'anit al shenechlaku beit shamayu al beit hillel. The 9th of Adar was made into a fast day because of this dispute. V'yakashe oto yom kasiyat ha'egel. It was like the day of the Egel, because what happened at the Egel? People were massacred. People died. In one version, 28,000 people were killed. Students were killed. Now that's a fantastical number. That's clearly an exaggeration. But the question I want to ask, the whole time that I want to ask, is how do Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel regard each other and their dispute? We have sources here that say they intermarried even though they disagreed about laws of marriage. We have sources that say that they saw legitimacy in each other's position and respected each other. We have sources that seem to say that they delegitimated each other's position, but with respect. And we have sources that say that they killed each other, not metaphorically, really killed each other over this dispute. Which is it? Which is it? And I think that the answer is back in that Mishnah and Sukkah. And that's what we have to take a look at. And we'll end with that, and we have... I think we have it, but we use around. I think so. Are you back, Donnie? So we'll see. All right, so we'll see if... All right.
So, Yitz, what is the real lesson as you see it?
Well, let's first figure out what happened before we get to the lesson. Let's see what happened.
Oh, you want to do it that way?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Good. Thanks. All right, so take a look in Source 5. And this, I believe, is really... Here, Ramon, I don't know if you want to see this. In Source 5, I think this is really kind of the corner of the whole... The one source that's going to give us some information about this. Mishaya Rosh Ovruo B'Sukkah. So you have a guy who's sitting in the Sukkah, Rishochano B'Toch HaBayit. On the tables in the house. Beit Shammai Poslim B'Til Machshirin, and again, there's two machlokot going on. One about the size of a Sukkah, and one of a big Sukkah, but your tables in the house. Amru Lehen Beit Hillel Beit Shammai. So what did Beit Hillel say to Beit Shammai? Lokach Hayam Ma'aseh. Now, think about what they're saying. This is Beit Hillel Beit Shammai, and I'm gonna put a year on it, which I'm making up. I'm gonna call it the year 60. When does Beit Hillel Beit Shammai get started? Around the year 0, and lasts for about 70 years. Once the temple is destroyed, there's no more Beit Hillel Beit Shammai, right? So it's two generations roughly. So Beit Hillel says to Beit Shammai, to try to support their position that you, if you sit that way in a sukkah, you're yotze. Shalchu zignei Beit Shammai v'zignei Beit Hillel v'akeret Rabbi Yochanan ben Achorani. Who are Zignei Beit Shammai Beit Hillel? Who are they?
Rabbeim.
They are our previous generation. Our previous generation, meaning Beit Shammai Beit Hillel was a school that lasted essentially for two generations. There were the students of Hillel and Shammai, and there were their students. So the students of Hillel and Shammai now are called Zignei Beit Hillel Beit Shammai. When the Rav Zatzal came to give shir and started giving shir in the 40s, the people who were sitting in the shir were not called Zignei Talmidei HaRav. They were called Talmidei HaRav. By the time the late 50s turned around and people started quoting them and seeking them out for understanding a shir, they were Zignei Talmidei HaRav. Right? You have the same thing in the court of the Rebbe. You have people who are the elders who were there when the Rebbe was even young, and you have those people who were there in his last years, and who were there who were only learned, never met him. And, right? So you have the same thing with any tradition. So these Beit Hillel and Shammai are the second generation. And they turn around and tell a story. And what was the story? That the first generation of students of whom? Both. Went to visit Rabbi Yochanan Acharoni. I got news for you. Rabbi Yochanan Acharoni is a student of Beit Shammai. We know that from a lot of other sources. They went to visit him on Sukkot. By the way, why did they go to visit him on Sukkot? Right? Because why not? And they're going to visit an elder on Sukkot. And the fact that he's from Beit Shammai doesn't matter. We're from Beit Hillel. That's okay. We go visit him on Sukkot. It's all good. Now, they go, and what do they see? They saw that he was sitting exactly that way with his table in the house and his himself in the sukkah, right? V'lo amru lo davar. And they didn't say anything to him. Now, what does they didn't say anything to them mean? What does their silence mean? There was a guy, okay. What is Beit Hillel is saying? Who didn't say anything to him? Nobody did. Which means, what Beit Hillel really claiming about to Beit Shammai? They're not claiming, we disagree with you. We're claiming, our elders didn't disagree about this, and you got the tradition wrong. You know, they're not saying that this is an old dispute and we've always been right. They're saying it's never been a dispute. Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel went to visit him, and nobody said anything because they were all comfortable with the way he was sitting, because they all know that that's mutar. That's your yotze that way. Which means, what are they saying to the current Beit Shammai guys? You blew it. You flubbed it. You misheard. You don't have the tradition right. What did Beit Shammai say back? Amru lahem Beit Shammai. Misham raya, you can bring a raya from that story. Afim amru lahem kain ha'ita no'ego ikiyam to mitzvah tzukam yamecha. They said, actually, what did the elders of Beit Shammai say to this rabbi? They said, if this is what you've been doing, you've never fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah. Which, by the way, if you think about it, is a very chutzpahic thing to say. But notice, what's Beit Shammai's position now? By the way, what does everybody agree about in this story? About what happened? He was sitting with his table in the house. Nobody challenges that. What did Beit Hillel say happened? Everybody went to visit him, and nobody said a word. And we could even take it further and say they sat down and ate with him in a sukkah. And what did Beit Shammai say? No, that's not what happened. You know what happened? They said to him, who's they? Who said to him, you never fulfilled the mitzvah sukkah? Everybody, the elders of Beit Hillel and the elders of Beit Shammai said, you never fulfilled the mitzvah sukkah. Meaning, our challenge to you is not that we disagree with you, we think we're right. Our challenge to you is that you didn't hear what your teachers told you correctly. You got the Masorah wrong. Now, we have a whole string, I mean, a spectrum of harmony, shall we say, from amazing harmony to civil war in these reports. Literally. From being able to intermarry, even though there's issues of arayot that we disagree about, all the way to killing each other. How do we understand that? So I take you far afield and very quickly double it back. When you read accounts in the Torah that says Bnei Yisrael complained, Bnei Yisrael said, let's go back to Mitzrayim. Bnei Yisrael sang. What does that mean? Does that mean every single member of Bnei Yisrael complained? Not at all. That's the famous Rashi at the Yom. It says there were three groups. One group said, let's go back. One group kvetched, and one group said, let's go with Moshe. Just because it's Bnei Yisrael doesn't mean everybody. When you hear a statement from Chazal and say, Chazal say, it's a little misleading because you're quoting a person like Rabbi Shimon or Rabbi Akiva or Ravina or somebody. And guess what? They disagree. They have different opinions. They have different approaches. And so it's convenient to say Chazal say. My father, Avshalom, used to, my mother told me this trick. Whenever he knew a statement of Chazal but he forgot where it was, he'd say, the rabbi say. It's an easy trick, you know. It's true. But it's not enough. When we say Beit Shammai Hillel, we're not talking about one guy. We're not even talking about one school at one time. We're talking about a continuum. And so the reports that we hear about Beit Shammai Hillel, I submit, are reports from different eras. Let's talk about Shammai and Hillel themselves. How many actual disagreements did they have? You mentioned before.
Six.
Six or less. We have four on record and an impossible fifth. That's it. Disagreements in halacha. Attitudinally, they were different. But in halacha, they had very few. One hand's worth, maybe, of machlokot. What happened afterwards? So remember the very first source we saw? Rabbi Yossi says, in the old days, there was no machloket. Who does he blame for the machloket? Talmidei Shammai and Hillel, they weren't diligent enough. What does that mean? They evidently didn't record the teachings of their teachers correctly. What happens in this Mishnah, in Sukkah? Each of them accuses the other of not knowing the Masorah correctly. Not of misunderstanding halacha, reasoning incorrectly, using the wrong pasuk. They just didn't get the Masorah correctly. So in the first generation, what do you have? You have Zignei Beit Shammai, Zignei Beit Hillel. How do they interact? They go to visit a sukkah together. There's harmony there. And they speak in one voice. What happens in the next generation? They're fighting about what actually happened in the first generation. They're further from Hillel and Shammai. And as a result of that, Beit Hillel and Shammai goes from two groups that learn together, that find ways to be harmonious, that find ways to live together, to two groups that have created an enmity where they claim ours is the only way. Not only my way or the highway, but to the point where we can even say, if you follow the other way, you chayav mitah, the statement in the Bavli. And that, of course, fits with what's going on among the Jewish people at that time. That's why it's so fitting for this season. This is the year just before the Chorban. And you're getting to the point where people are saying, like we know with the zealots and the rabbis, they're saying, mine is the only way, and if you do your way, I'm going to kill you. So that you remember the story with Abbas Sikra and Rabbi Yochanan. Where he's afraid his own men would kill him if he tried to approach the Romans with an offer. Right? So when you look at the sources, the first thing we've got to do is step back and say, what's the context of the source? But to which group is the source referring? What you see is machloket developing and going from perhaps differences in how we look at halacha to much more strident differences about what you actually heard, to the point where there's no way for them to live together. That pretty much explodes with the Churban. And the truth is Beit Shammai sort of disappears, and it's pretty much the Beit Hillelites who are the leading leaders in Yavne. And what continues? There is Rebbe Eliezer, but see what happens to Rebbe Eliezer. And from then on, things take on a different, very different hue. Just an interesting foray into seeing how Beit Shammai Beit Hillel got along. Next week we'll do a special shiur in honor of the period, and then we'll take a couple weeks off. I'll be in Israel for the Imei Yun.